Joyous festival would begin on the 25th day of the month of Kislev and last 8 days. Then they built strong walls and high towers around Mount Zion to protect the temple from being destroyed by Gentiles again, and Judas stationed soldiers there. He also built a fortress in the town of Beth-Zur to keep Israel safe from attack by the Idumeans. The Wars of Judas. Chapter 5. When the neighboring nations heard that the altar and the temple were again ready to be used in worship, they became furious and were determined to kill every Jew who lived among them. So they started killing the Jewish people. Judas fought back by attacking the Idumeans, who had often ambushed the people of Israel. Finally, in the region of Acrabatene, he wiped out most of them and took everything of value. Then Judas promised God, "Now I'll destroy the Benaites, that gang of robbers and murderers who set traps for Jewish travelers." So he ordered his troops to surround the towers where they were hiding and to burn down the towers with everyone inside. Judas also invaded the country of Ammon, where someone by the name of Timothy ruled a large number of people. Timothy's army was strong, and Judas had to attack many times before completely destroying it. Judas captured the town of Jazer and its villages. Then he went back to Judea. Simon and Judas win more victories. Some of the Israelites in Gilead took shelter in the fortress at Dathema because an army of Gentiles in that region planned to attack. Then they sent a letter to Judas and his brothers. It said, "An army of Gentiles is about to surround us at Dathema, and their leader is Timothy. Please send help right away. These Gentiles have not only killed many of us, but they've robbed and murdered just about every Jew in Tob and captured their families. Almost 1,000 have already died." Before Judas finished reading this letter, messengers arrived from Galilee. They had torn their clothes to show their sorrow, and they said, "An army is ready to destroy us. It is made up of Gentiles from all over Galilee, and of troops from the cities of Ptolemais, Tyre, and Sidon." Judas and his troops listened to these reports. Then they called together a large group to decide what should be done to help those who were in danger and under attack. Judas said to his brother Simon, "Take some soldiers to Galilee and rescue our people. Our brother Jonathan and I will lead an army to Gilead." Judas left two officials, Azariah and Joseph, in command of his troops in Judea, and he told them, "You're in charge, but don't attack the Gentiles until we return." Simon led 3,000 soldiers to Galilee, and Judas took 8,000 to Gilead. In Galilee, Simon had to attack the Gentiles many times before completely destroying them. He and his soldiers pushed them back to the city of Ptolemais, where they killed about 3,000 Gentiles and took everything they wanted. Simon brought the Jews of Galilee and Arbata, along with their families and their possessions, to Judea. When they arrived, everyone was shouting and celebrating. Judas and Jonathan in Gilead. Meanwhile, Judas Maccabeus and his brother Jonathan crossed the Jordan River and traveled through the desert for 3 days. Some friendly Nabataeans told them everything Timothy had done to the Jews in Gilead. They said, "Your people are being kept prisoner in the large walled towns of Gilead, including Bozra, Bosor, Alma, Casfo, Makkid, and Carnaim. Besides this, the Gentiles are going to attack your fortresses tomorrow, and in one day they can overpower your troops there and kill everyone." Judas and his army saw that the attack had already begun, so they hurried along the desert road to Bozra. They captured the town and killed every man and boy in it. Then they took everything of value and set the town on fire. That night, Judas and his army left Bozra and went straight to the fortress of Dathema, where they arrived early the next morning. More Gentiles than could be counted were attacking the fortress with ladders and weapons to break through the walls. Judas knew that the battle had begun because shouts to God and trumpet blasts were coming from the fortress, so he told his army Today you must fight for your people. Judas divided his army into three groups. Then a signal was blown on the trumpet, and the troops shouted prayers as they attacked the enemy from behind. When Timothy and his army realized that Judas Maccabeus was leading the attack, they tried to escape, but he attacked them fiercely, and about 8,000 of them were slaughtered that day. Judas led his army to the town of Maepha, which they attacked and captured. Then, after killing the men and boys and taking everything of value, they burned the town. Judas also captured the other towns in Gilead, including Casphu, Makked, and Bosor. Timothy then got together another army and camped on the other side of the stream near the town of Rephon. Meanwhile, Judas had sent out spies who came back and told him, "Timothy has a large army of Gentiles from all around here, and he has even hired some Arabs to join him. He's camped on the other side of the stream, eager to fight with you." Judas led his army to meet them, and they took up their positions near the stream. When Timothy saw them, he said to his officers, "If Judas crosses the stream to attack, we won't have a chance, and he will destroy us. But if he stops and sets up camp on the other side of the stream, that means he's afraid of us. Then we will cross over and destroy him." Judas ordered his troops to move close to the stream. Then he told his officers, "Stand here beside the stream and make sure that no one stays behind to set up camp. Everyone must join in the attack." Afterwards, Judas led all the troops across and wiped out Timothy's army. The enemies threw down their weapons and ran for safety to a temple in the town of Capernaum. But the Jewish troops captured Capernaum and burned the temple down with everyone inside. Capernaum was left in ruins, and the Gentiles in Gilead stopped bothering Judas. Judas returns to Judea. Judas brought together the Jews of Gilead, no matter how rich or poor they were. Then they set out for Judea with their families and all of their possessions. On the way, this large crowd came to the walled town of Ephron. They had to go through the town because it was impossible for them to take their families and possessions around it. But the people of Ephron piled up stones in front of the town gates and refused to let them pass through. Judas sent a friendly message to the town, saying, "Please let us pass through. We're on our way to Judea, and we won't make any trouble." But the people of Ephron still refused to let them in. So Judas ordered his troops to set up camp there, and they attacked Ephron all day and night. When they broke through the walls, they killed the men and boys and took everything of value. Then they destroyed Ephron and walked right over the dead bodies on their way through the town. Judas crossed the Jordan River and came to the great valley near the town of Beth-Shan. From there, he led the people to Judea, encouraging and helping everyone, especially those who were dragging behind. After they had arrived safely in Jerusalem, they went to the temple and offered sacrifices. Azariah and Joseph are defeated. Joseph and Azariah were in command of the Jewish forces in Judea when they heard about the victories of Judas and Jonathan in Gilead and about Simon's success in attacking the town of Ptolemais in Galilee. And they said, "Let's attack the Gentiles around here and make ourselves famous." So Azariah and Joseph ordered their troops to attack the fortress of Jamnia, where Gorgias and his army were stationed. The enemy came out of the fortress to fight, and defeated Joseph and Azariah, chasing their troops all the way to Judea and killing about 2,000 of them. This battle was lost because Azariah and Joseph disobeyed Judas and his brothers by trying to win a victory for themselves. God had chosen the family of Judas to rescue Israel, and Azariah and Joseph were not from that family. Judas and his brothers became even more famous among both Jews and Gentiles, and people traveled to Jerusalem to honor them. Judas fights more wars. Judas and his brothers left Jerusalem with an army to invade the land south of them where the Idumeans lived. Their army surrounded the town of Hebron and its villages, Then they destroyed its fortresses and burned its towers. On their way to invade the land of the Philistines, Judas and his brothers came to the town of Marissa. That same day some priests foolishly started a battle because they wanted to become heroes, but instead they died in the fighting. Judas and his troops turned aside into the territory of Azotus, where they tore down the altars and burned the wooden idols. Then they attacked and robbed some nearby towns before returning to Judea. The Death of King Antiochus the Fourth. Chapter 6. One day, as King Antiochus the Fourth was leading his army through Mesopotamia, he heard about the Persian city of Elemais, which was famous for its treasures of silver and gold. The temple in Elemais was especially rich because of the gold shields, armor, and weapons that had been left there by Alexander the Great, the first king to rule the Greeks. Antiochus tried to capture the city of Elemais and take its treasures, but his attack failed because the people found out about his plans and fought hard against him. Antiochus was terribly frustrated and started back toward Babylonia. But while he was still in Persia, a messenger came and said, "The Jews have crushed the armies you sent to Judea, including the huge army Lysias led there. They are now a powerful force because they have taken a lot of weapons, supplies, and other things from the armies they defeated. The Jews have always despised the horrible thing you placed on their altar in Jerusalem. Now they have torn it down and once again built high walls around their temple and turned your town of Beth-Zur into a fortress." Antiochus was so shocked and discouraged by this report that he got sick and had to stay in bed for many days. He never got over the shock, and just before he died he called together his trusted friends and said, "I can't close my eyes at night. I'm sick from worry, and keep saying to myself, 'How did you ever get into such a mess? Why are you up to your neck in troubles? After all, you are a kind ruler, and everyone likes you.' My friends, I can't forget about the crimes I committed in Jerusalem. I robbed the city of its silver and gold, and I sent soldiers to murder the innocent people of Judea. These crimes are the reason I'm dying of sorrow here in a foreign land." Antiochus told his friend Philip to come near his bed. He put Philip in command of the whole kingdom and gave him his crown, his robe, and his ring. Then he said, "Raise my son so that he will be ready to rule the kingdom." Antiochus died in the year 149 of the Syrian kingdom. Antiochus the Fifth becomes king. The young son of Antiochus the Fourth had been brought up by Lysias, and when Lysias heard that Antiochus was dead, he crowned the boy Antiochus the Fifth and named him Eupator. Antiochus the Fifth and Judas. Meanwhile, some enemies were still in the Jerusalem fortress, where they were trying to keep control of the temple and help the Gentiles by causing trouble for the Jews. Judas decided to attack the fortress and get rid of those troublemakers. So he and his troops set up movable towers and other weapons of war and attacked in the year 150 of the Syrian kingdom. Some of the troops in the fortress escaped and were joined by a group of unfaithful Jews. Together they went to Antiochus the Fifth and said, "Aren't you ever going to get even with those Jews for what they did to our group? We gladly obeyed your father's laws, and we liked working for him. That's why those Jews hate us and are attacking the fortress. King Antiochus, they have captured and killed some of our people. They've stolen our property and attacked all the countries near Judea as well. Their temple and the town of Beth-Zur are powerful fortresses, and right now those Jews are attacking the fortress in Jerusalem. Do something fast. Soon there will be no way to stop them." When Antiochus heard this, he became furious. So he, together with his trusted friends and army officers, decided on a plan of attack. He hired soldiers from other kingdoms and from the Greek islands until he had 100,000 soldiers and 20,000 cavalry. He also had 32 elephants trained for war. He led his army through Idumea, and for a long time he attacked the town of Beth-zur with weapons to break through the wall. But the people fought back bravely. They even rushed out of the town and set fire to the weapons of war. Judas fights the Gentiles at Beth-Zechariah. Judas called off his attack on the Jerusalem fortress and led his army to the town of Beth-Zechariah, where he camped not far from the army of Antiochus V. Early the next morning, Antiochus moved his army toward them at Beth-Zechariah, then he ordered his troops to line up for battle and to blow their war trumpets. Some of the soldiers gave the elephants grape juice and mulberry juice to make them eager to fight. Others then led the elephants to their places among the troops. 500 expert cavalry and 1,000 troops with bronze helmets and metal armor worked with each animal. These men were commanded not to leave the elephants until the battle was over. A strong wooden platform with 4 sides and a top was strapped on the back of each elephant. Then 4 well-armed soldiers and someone from India to guide the elephant were stationed on the platform. Antiochus placed the rest of his cavalry to the right and to the left of the army because he wanted the cavalry troops to stay close to his army for protection and to attack the Jewish forces whenever they could. His huge army covered the hills and the valleys, and when the columns of soldiers marched forward, their gold and brass shields caught the rays of the sun and made the hillsides blaze with light. The loud and clanging sound of this powerful army brought terror to the hearts of all who heard them coming, but Judas and his troops still attacked, and they killed 600 of the enemy troops. The death of Eleazar. Eleazar noticed that the largest elephant was dressed in the royal armor, so he said to himself, "I'm certain Antiochus must be up there." Eleazar killed every enemy soldier around him, and others ran away as he bravely fought his way toward the huge elephant. Then he ran under it and stabbed it to death. But the heavy elephant sank down and crushed him. Eleazar gave up his life to save his people, and he will never be forgotten. Suddenly the Jews realized how helpless they were against the fierce attack of the king's army, and they started running away. Antiochus V attacks the temple. Antiochus V surrounded Jerusalem with part of his army, while the rest of his troops set up camp everywhere in Judea. All of this happened during the 7th year, when the Jews do not plant crops. Antiochus attacked the town of Beth-zur. Its people soon ran out of food and had to stop fighting, so they surrendered and left their town. Then Antiochus stationed his own soldiers there. Meanwhile, his army was still attacking the troops stationed in the temple. They built movable towers and weapons that hurled fire, stones, arrows, and other deadly objects. The Jews then built the same kinds of weapons and fought back for several days. But it was the year when they had let the fields rest, and they ran out of supplies because they had given what little food they had stored in the temple to those who had run away from the Gentiles and had come to Judea. Most of the people went home because they were starving. Only a small group was left in the temple. Lysias wants peace. Before Antiochus IV died, he had made his friend Philip promise that the younger Antiochus would take his place as king. Philip wanted control of the kingdom, and so he brought back the part of the army that had been in Persia and Media. When Lysias found out what Philip was doing, he said to the young Antiochus V and to the officers and the soldiers, "You must leave Jerusalem at once. Things are getting worse every day. We're short of food and the enemy fortress is powerful. Besides, we have other problems to solve. Let's sign a treaty with these Jews and the rest of their nation to let them follow their own customs again. After all, they got angry and did all these things because we ordered them to give up the traditions of their ancestors." Antiochus and his officers liked what Lysias had suggested, so he promised to let the Jews live in peace, and they left the fortress. But when Antiochus came to Mount Zion and saw what a powerful fortress it was, he broke his promise and ordered his soldiers to tear down the fortress walls. Then he rushed off to the city of Antioch, where he found Philip in command. He attacked him and recaptured the city. Bacchides and Alcimus. Chapter 7. In the year 151 of the Syrian kingdom, Demetrius, the son of Seleucus, sailed with a few soldiers from Rome to the coastal city of Tripolis, where he appointed himself king. From there, Demetrius went to his ancestor's palace in Antioch, and he arrived just as some soldiers were arresting Antiochus and Lysias. The soldiers wanted to hand them over to Demetrius, but he said, "I don't even want to look at them." The soldiers put them to death, and he took command of the whole kingdom. Alcimus, leader of the unfaithful Jews, wanted Demetrius to appoint him high priest. So one day he and his followers went to Demetrius and brought charges against the other Jews. They said, "Judas and his brothers have killed all of your trusted friends and forced us out of our country. Please send an officer you can rely on and let him see the damage they have done to our property and to your kingdom. Then punish them and their followers." Demetrius did as they requested, and sent his trusted friend Bacchides to Judea. Bacchides was a powerful and loyal official who was governor of the region between Egypt and the Euphrates River. But Demetrius also appointed that worthless Alcimus to be high priest and sent him along with instructions to punish the people of Judea. Bacchides and Alcimus led a powerful army to Judea. Then they sent Judas and his brothers some messengers who lied and promised peace. But no one believed them, because Bacchides and Alcimus had brought such a large army. Some Jewish leaders visit Alcimus and Bacchides. Some very devout Jews wanted to make peace with the Gentiles, so they sent some of their experts in the law of Moses to ask Bacchides and Alcimus to treat their people fairly. These experts had said to themselves, "Alcimus has come with the army, but he is a priest from the family of Aaron, and he will surely treat us with kindness." Alcimus promised to let these devout Jews live in peace, and they believed him. But he later arrested 60 of them and put them all to death in one day. This is what the scriptures said would happen: "The blood-stained bodies of God's faithful people now lie scattered everywhere in Jerusalem, and there's no one left to bury the dead." Everyone started trembling with fear and said, "Alcimus and Bacchides are deceitful liars who never keep their word." Bacchides moved his army out of Jerusalem and set up camp near Bethzaith. From there he sent soldiers to arrest some of the Jews and those troops who had deserted his army. Then the soldiers murdered them all and dumped their bodies into a deep well. Bacchides returned to Demetrius and left Alcimus with a large group of troops to control Judea. Alcimus had a hard time keeping his position as high priest, but a lot of troublemakers helped him, and together they took control of the nation and did horrible things to the people. Judas takes action. When Judas found out that Alcimus and his followers were causing so much trouble, he said, "They're worse than the Gentiles." Then Judas and his soldiers went to the nearby towns of Judea, punishing the unfaithful Jews without letting any of them escape. Alcimus realized that he could not oppose Judas and his powerful army, so he returned to King Demetrius and accused them of terrible crimes. Nicanor fights Judas. King Demetrius had an outstanding officer by the name of Nicanor, who hated the Jews, and the king ordered him to destroy them all. When Nicanor and his large army arrived in Jerusalem, he sent messengers with false promises of peace to Judas and his brothers. The messengers said, "Let's not get into a fight. A few of my bodyguards and I just want to have a friendly talk with you here in your camp." Nicanor gave orders for his bodyguards to kidnap Judas. So Nicanor went with them to the camp, where Nicanor greeted him like a friend. But Judas found out what Nicanor had in mind, and he was frightened and refused to meet with him. When Nicanor realized that he could not trick Judas, he attacked him, near the town of Kaphar Salama. Nicanor lost about 500 soldiers in the battle before the rest of his army retreated to the fortress in Jerusalem. Nicanor disgraces the temple. Sometime later, Nicanor went up to Mount Zion, where he was met by some priests and leaders outside the temple. They welcomed him peacefully and showed him how they offered sacrifices as a way of asking God to bless King Demetrius. Nicanor laughed and made fun of the priests and leaders. He even spit on them and made them unfit to serve God. He was so arrogant and angry that he said, "If Judas and his soldiers aren't handed over to me immediately, I'll return here and destroy your temple just as soon as I defeat him." Nicanor was furious when he left. The priests returned to the temple courtyard, where they stared at the temple and the altar. Then with tears in their eyes they prayed, "You have chosen this temple as the place where your people must worship in your name. Defeat Nicanor and his army. Destroy them in battle. Don't ever forget how they insulted you, and don't let them live." Nicanor led his troops out of Jerusalem, and they camped near the town of Beth Horon, where they were joined by a force of Syrian soldiers. After Judas and his army of 3,000 soldiers set up camp near the town of Adasa, Judas prayed, "Our God, a long time ago the king of Assyria sent messengers to insult you, but your angel slaughtered 185,000 of his soldiers. Destroy Nicanor's army today, and it will show our enemies that Nicanor cannot get away with disgracing your temple." God punishes Nicanor. The battle took place on the 13th day of the month of Adar, and Nicanor's army was wiped out. He himself was the first to be killed, and when his troops saw what had happened, they threw down their weapons and ran for their lives. For the rest of the day, Judas and his soldiers chased the enemy troops from Adasa as far as Gezerah. They blew trumpets as they went along, and their friends rushed out from nearby villages of Judea. They attacked the enemy from the side and forced them to turn back toward Judas and his army. Not one of Nicanor's troops survived. The Jews took everything of value from the dead enemy soldiers, then they chopped off Nicanor's head and the right hand he had used to disgrace the temple and took them to Jerusalem, where they displayed them outside the city. The Jews held a joyful victory celebration and decided to celebrate on the 13th day of Adar each year. And so there was peace in Judea for a while. What Judas heard about the Romans. Chapter 8. This is what Judas heard about the Romans. The Romans are a famous and mighty nation, but they are kind and friendly to their allies and to other countries that ask them for help. Powerful Roman armies have already won great victories in Gaul. Not only have they defeated that country, but they have forced it to pay taxes. The Romans have also captured the gold and silver mines in Spain. In fact, by patient and careful planning, they have conquered all of Spain, even though it is a great distance from Rome. The Romans have crushed the kings of every nation that attacked them, and they have forced the kings who survived to pay taxes to them each year. The Roman armies have also destroyed other enemies, including Kings Perseus and Philip of Macedonia, and King Antiochus the Great of Asia. The Romans even crushed the forces of King Antiochus when he attacked with chariots, cavalry, 120 elephants, and a huge army. They took him alive and ordered him and his descendants to give them a lot of money and many hostages. Antiochus also had to hand over to them the countries of India, Media, and Lydia, as well as some of the best areas he controlled. Then the Romans gave all this territory to King Eumenes. When the Romans found out that the Greeks were plotting against them, they sent a general to attack the Greeks. His army killed and wounded many of them, and then captured their families and took everything of value. After the Romans had conquered Greece, they tore down its fortresses, and they still rule that country today. The Romans destroyed the rest of the kingdoms and islands that opposed them, and they put Roman rulers in charge. But they are kind to their allies and to other nations who ask for help. If the Romans want to make someone a king, they do it. If they want to get rid of a king, they do that too. The way the Romans treat kings all over the world makes everyone terrified of them. Although Rome is a mighty nation, its rulers don't show off by wearing crowns or purple robes. Instead, they have built a meeting house where 320 senators meet each day to pass good laws for ruling their nation. Every year, the Romans elect one man to govern them and the countries under their control. Everyone obeys this ruler, and no one is ever jealous of him. Judas makes an agreement with Rome. Judas realized that he needed to make an agreement with the Romans in order to rescue his people from King Demetrius, who wanted to make them his slaves. So Judas sent Eupolemus and Jason to work out an agreement with them. After making the long trip to Rome, they met with the Roman senators and said, "Judas Maccabeus and his brothers, together with all our people, have sent us, because they want you to make a peace treaty with us Jews and let us be your allies." The Romans liked what Eupolemus and Jason said, and they replied by writing a letter on sheets of bronze. They sent the letter to Jerusalem to serve as a reminder that Rome was a friend and ally. The letter said, "We pray that all will go well with the Romans and Jews both on land and sea, and that we will never have any wars or enemies. You Jewish people must be ready and willing to do all you can if enemies attack Rome or any of the nations under our rule. As it was decided in Rome, you must not send food, weapons, money, or ships to these enemies. So keep your part of this agreement, and don't expect anything in return. In the same way, we Romans will gladly do all we can if you are attacked. We won't supply your enemies with food, weapons, money, or ships, and we will keep our word without any tricks. This is the agreement that we Romans have now made with you Jews, but it can be changed if later we both agree to do so, and any changes will be just as binding." The Romans also told the Jewish messengers, "We've written to King Demetrius about the trouble he is causing you, and we told him, 'King Demetrius, the Jews are friends and allies of Rome. Why are you so cruel to them? If we hear of any more trouble, we will defend their rights and attack you with our army and navy.'" Bacchides returns to Judea. Chapter 9. King Demetrius found out that Nicanor and all his soldiers had been killed. So he sent Bacchides and Alcimus the high priest back to Judea with half of his army. On the way to Gilgal in Judea, Bacchides and Alcimus captured the town of Mesaloth in Arbela, and they killed many of the people. They reached Jerusalem early in the year 152 of the Syrian kingdom and set up camp outside the city. Then they stationed 20,000 soldiers and 2,000 cavalry in the town of Beria. 3,000 of the Jews' best soldiers were camped at Elissa under the command of Judas. But when they saw the size of the enemy army, they were terrified and ran. Only about 800 soldiers stayed in camp. When the fighting was about to start, Judas suddenly realized that most of his troops had deserted, and he was terribly discouraged because there was no time to bring them back. Judas felt like giving up, but he said to his remaining troops, "Get ready to attack. We've got a good chance to win." But they argued with Judas and said, "We will all be killed if we attack with such a small force. Let's wait and come back with a larger army." Judas answered, "We will never back down from a fight with the enemy. If it's our time to die for the honor of our nation, then let's die like heroes." Bacchides led his army out of camp and placed half of his cavalry to the left of his soldiers and half to the right. His best troops led the way, followed by men who were experts with bows and arrows or rocks and slings. Bacchides himself was on the right side of his army. Both armies gave the signal to attack, and the battle began. The fighting lasted from daylight until dark, and the ground trembled because of the noise. At one point in the battle, Judas looked over at the right side of the enemy army and saw Bacchides and many of his best soldiers there. So Judas and his bravest troops attacked and destroyed most of that part of the enemy army. The few who escaped were chased as far as Mount Azotus. When the soldiers on the left side of Bacchides' army learned that the rest of their army had been wiped out, they swung around and attacked from behind. The fighting was fierce, and many from both armies were either killed or wounded. Judas himself died in the battle, and the rest of the Jews ran away. Jonathan and Simon took the body of their brother Judas back to Modin and buried him in the family tomb. They cried bitterly, and everyone in Israel mourned for a long time. They said, "Judas was a mighty warrior who saved our nation. Why did he have to die?" Indeed, Judas was a brave warrior and a great hero, and he did many other important things that are not included in this book. Jonathan leads the Jews. After the death of Judas, some troublemakers and their worthless friends showed up again everywhere in Judea. The crops had failed that year, and everyone in the whole country joined these troublemakers. Bacchides appointed some godless people to rule the country, and they searched carefully for any followers of Judas. Then they brought them to Bacchides, who laughed as he punished them. The troubles in Israel were worse now than they had been since the time God had stopped sending prophets. The followers of Judas got together and said to Jonathan, "Ever since your brother Judas died, we haven't had anyone like him to lead us into battle against enemies like Bacchides or against our own people who hate us. So today we have chosen you to take the place of Judas. Be our ruler and lead us in battle." Jonathan agreed. The Wars of Jonathan. Bacchides plotted to kill Jonathan as soon as he found out that Jonathan was the new leader. But his plan failed because Jonathan and his brother Simon were warned and escaped with their followers to a camp near the waterhole at Asphar in the desert around Tekoa. On a Sabbath, Bacchides learned where the camp was, and he led his army across the Jordan River. Jonathan's brother John was also one of the Jewish leaders. One day, on orders from Jonathan, he asked some friendly Nabataeans to guard their huge stock of supplies. But some people of the Jambri tribe from Medeba captured John and the supplies, then rode away. Later, Jonathan and his brother Simon were told, "The Jambri tribe is holding a big wedding celebration, and the bride is being brought here from the town of Nedabeth. Many soldiers are guarding her because she's the daughter of a very important man from Canaan." Meanwhile, Jonathan and Simon had learned that this tribe had murdered their brother John, so they left camp and set an ambush on a hillside overlooking the road. Soon they saw a noisy group of travelers with a lot of baggage. It was the bride with her family and friends. The groom and his friends were coming to meet them, playing drums and musical instruments, and all of them were armed. The Jews attacked from their hiding places, killing and wounding many in the wedding party. Then they took everything of value from the dead, and the others ran off into the hills. A wedding was turned into a funeral, and wedding music into funeral songs. After Jonathan and Simon had punished the tribe of Jambri, they returned to their camp in the marshes along the Jordan River. But Bacchides found out where they were camped, and on the Sabbath he led a large army to the edge of the river. Jonathan warned his soldiers, "Get ready to fight for your lives. We've never been in this much danger before, and there is no way out. The enemy army is both in front of us and behind us, and the river is on one side, and the marshes covered with thorn bushes are on the other. So pray for God to rescue us." As soon as the battle began, Jonathan tried to kill Bacchides. However, he escaped to the rear of his army. Jonathan and his soldiers then jumped into the river and started swimming toward the other side, but the enemy troops did not go after them. That day, Bacchides lost about 1,000 men. Bacchides builds fortresses in Judea. Bacchides returned to Jerusalem and started building high walls and strong gates for some of the towns of Judea, including Emmaus, Beth-horon, Bethel, Timnath, Pharathon, Antiphon, and the fortress at Jericho. He stationed soldiers in these towns, and they caused trouble for the Jews. Bacchides also strengthened the fortress in Jerusalem and the towns of Beth-Zur and Gezerah. He put soldiers and food supplies in these strongholds. Then he took the sons of the Jewish leaders as hostages and locked them up in the Jerusalem fortress. Alcimus the high priest dies. In the second month of the year 153 of the Syrian kingdom, Alcimus the high priest ordered his followers to destroy the wall in the temple courtyard that prophets of earlier times had said should be built. But no sooner had the work begun than Alcimus got sick and everything stopped. He couldn't move or even give instructions for making out his will. He died a very painful death. After Bacchides learned that Alcimus had died, he returned to King Demetrius, and Judea had peace for 2 years. Bacchides attacks Jonathan. Once again, the troublemaker started plotting against Jonathan and his followers by saying, "They feel safe and aren't suspecting a thing, so let's send for Bacchides. He could easily capture them in one night." The troublemakers met with Bacchides and planned an attack. Then Bacchides set out for Judea with a large army. On the way, he sent secret orders for his followers there to capture Jonathan and his troops. But they could not do this, because Jonathan and his followers learned of Bacchides' plan, and so they arrested about 50 leaders of the plot and put them to death. Jonathan and Simon led their forces to the desert town of Bethbasai. Part of the town had been destroyed, but they repaired it and built high walls with strong gates. When Bacchides found out about this, he got together his whole army and sent orders to his followers in Judea. Then he led his army to Bethbasai and surrounded the town. His soldiers set up weapons to break through the walls, and they attacked that town for a long time. At one point in the battle, Jonathan put his brother Simon in command of the town. Then he led a small group into the country where he defeated Adomira and his tribe. He also wiped out another tribe called the Phaserites. Those who were left joined his army and helped him fight against Bacchides. Meanwhile, Simon and his soldiers rushed out of Bethbasai and set fire to the weapons that had been set up for breaking through the walls. In fact, they destroyed the entire army of Bacchides and ruined all of his plans for war. Bacchides was so furious at the troublemakers who had told him to invade Judea that he put many of them to death. Then he got ready to return to his own country. When Jonathan found out that Bacchides was about to leave Judea, he sent him some messengers who said, "Let's make peace and set our prisoners free." Bacchides agreed. He released the Jews he had captured in Judea and promised not to bother Judas again. Then he went back to his own country and never returned to Judea. Now there was peace in Israel. Jonathan ruled from the town of Michmash and started destroying godless people everywhere in the nation. Demetrius makes friends with Jonathan. Chapter 10. Alexander Epiphanes was the son of King Antiochus IV. He landed on the Phoenician coast and captured the city of Ptolemais in the year 160 of the Syrian kingdom. The people welcomed Alexander as their king. When King Demetrius found out that Alexander was in Ptolemais, he got together a mighty army and set out to attack him. Demetrius sent Jonathan a friendly letter that flattered him. He was thinking, "Jonathan could not have forgotten the terrible things I did to him and his brothers and his nation. If I don't hurry and make peace with him, he will join forces with Alexander and attack." In the letter, Demetrius said, "Jonathan, you have my permission to build a strong army and to be my ally, and I have told my soldiers to release to you the hostages that I'm keeping in the fortress at Jerusalem." Jonathan took this letter to Jerusalem and read it to everyone, including those in the fortress. His enemies were terrified by the letter because it allowed him to build up an army. The soldiers in the fortress immediately released the hostages to Jonathan, and he let them go home to their parents. Jonathan moved to Jerusalem and began repairing and rebuilding the city. He ordered the workers to cut square blocks of stone and to build strong walls around Jerusalem and Mount Zion. The workers followed his orders. Bacchides had left foreign soldiers in the fortresses he had built, but they quickly returned home. Only a few Jews who were unfaithful to the law stayed in Beth Zur for their own safety. Jonathan becomes high priest. Someone told King Alexander, "Jonathan and his brothers are brave fighters who have fought many wars and who know what it means to suffer, and Demetrius has promised them many things if they will join him." Alexander replied, "I'd better make Jonathan my friend and ally. I'll never find anyone else like him." Alexander then sent Jonathan a letter, in which he said, "King Alexander sends greetings to his dear friend Jonathan. I've been told that you are a powerful soldier and the kind of man who deserves to be one of my trusted friends. So I appoint you high priest for your nation and a friend of the king. This means that you must be a very loyal follower. I'm also sending you a purple robe and a gold crown." During the Festival of Shelters, in the 7th month of the year 160 of the Syrian kingdom, Jonathan became high priest. He also built up a strong army. King Demetrius writes to Jonathan again. When King Demetrius heard the news about Alexander and Jonathan, he was deeply distressed and said, "What have we done? Alexander's agreement with the Jews has made him very powerful. Now I must write a friendly letter to the Jews and promise them better gifts and more honors. Then they'll come over to my side." And so Demetrius wrote, "King Demetrius sends greetings to the Jewish nation. I was very pleased to learn that you have kept your promises. This means you are still my friends and allies. If you remain loyal to me, I will reward you for everything you do. I will give you valuable gifts and not make you pay heavy taxes. My Jewish friends, you are excused from paying taxes on salt as well as the other usual taxes, including the special royal tax. And from now on, you no longer have to give me a share of your grain and fruit. I will never again take anything you grow in Judea or in the three districts added to Judea from Samaria and Galilee. And I consider Jerusalem and the land that belongs to it so holy that I won't tax the money you receive from these places. The high priest will take over from me the control of the Jerusalem fortress, and his own soldiers can guard it. I will free every Jew who has been taken prisoner anywhere in my kingdom. You won't have to pay anything for them, and they won't have to pay taxes, not even on their livestock. On special days such as festivals, Sabbaths, or the first day of a month, my officials will not collect taxes or fees from any Jew in the kingdom, and on the 3 days before and after festivals, my officials will not collect taxes or fees. No one will collect taxes from you or bother you for any reason on those special days. I will let as many as 30,000 Jewish soldiers join my army, and they will be paid the same as the other soldiers. Some of them will help guard my main fortresses, and others will be given important jobs in the kingdom. I'll let them live by their own laws and choose their own leaders and officers. In fact, this is how things already are in Judea. The three districts of Judea that belong to Samaria will become a permanent part of Judea. The high priest will be the only ruler for Judea, and these three districts and everyone must obey him. I have given the city of Ptolemais and the land around it as a gift to the temple in Jerusalem in order to supply money to help pay for running the temple. Every year I'll send you 15,000 pieces of silver from the treasuries in places under my control. For the past few years, my officials have failed to send you the extra money that they should have sent. Now they will start sending it again to meet the needs of the temple. In the past, you had to pay me 5,000 pieces of silver every year as a tax on the money the temple earned. Now this tax money will go to the priests who serve in the temple. If anyone is hiding in or around the Jerusalem temple because they owe money to me or someone else, they are free to leave, and any property they own in my kingdom will be returned to them. I will pay for repairing and rebuilding the temple. I will also pay for fixing the walls and towers in the towns in Judea, including Jerusalem." The death of King Demetrius. Jonathan and the others remembered how cruel King Demetrius had been to them, and they did not believe a word he had written. Instead, they sided with King Alexander because he had come with the best offer of peace, and they remained his allies until he died. Alexander built up a mighty army and led it into battle against the army of Demetrius. The fighting was fierce and lasted until dark. Finally, the soldiers of Demetrius ran away, but Alexander and his army went after them and killed many, including Demetrius himself. Alexander and Ptolemy become allies. King Alexander sent a message to King Ptolemy VI of Egypt. It said, "I've returned to rule the kingdom of my ancestors, but before I could take control I had to do away with Demetrius, so I destroyed him and his army, and now I am king. Ptolemy, I would like for us to become allies. Let me marry your daughter and be your son-in-law. Then I will give each of you gifts that are worthy of a king and his daughter." Ptolemy wrote back, "Alexander, it was a happy day when you came back to rule the kingdom of your ancestors. I let you marry my daughter, just as you asked in your letter. But first, meet me in the city of Ptolemais, so we can get to know each other." In the year 162 of the Syrian kingdom, Ptolemy and his daughter Cleopatra left Egypt and went to the city of Ptolemais. The two kings met each other, and Ptolemy let Alexander marry Cleopatra. They had a very fancy wedding, just as kings always do. Meanwhile, Jonathan, the high priest, received a letter from Alexander inviting him to come to Ptolemais for a visit with him and Ptolemy. Jonathan accepted the invitation and won their friendship by giving both kings and their trusted friends some silver and gold, as well as many other gifts. One day, a group of troublemakers and rebels came from Judea and brought charges against Jonathan. But Alexander would not listen to them. Instead, he let Jonathan wear the purple robes of royalty and sit next to him. The king told his officers, "Take Jonathan to the center of the city and order everyone to stop bothering him with all these charges." The troublemakers listened to the officers, telling everyone to leave Jonathan alone. And when they saw Jonathan standing there in his purple robes, they realized how important he was, so they all ran away. Alexander gave Jonathan even more honors. He included him among his most trusted friends and made him governor of Judea and a general in the Syrian army. After this, Jonathan returned to Jerusalem safe and sound. Jonathan and Apollonius. Demetrius II was the son of Demetrius, and in the year 165 of the Syrian kingdom, he sailed from Crete to the land of his ancestors. When Alexander heard about this, he became worried and returned to the city of Antioch. Demetrius appointed Apollonius ruler of southwest Syria province. So Apollonius built up a large army and set up camp near the town of Jamnia. Then he sent the following letter to Jonathan the high priest. "Jonathan, you are the only one who is still fighting against us, and you are making others laugh and sneer at me. Why do you keep rebelling against us there in the hill country? If you are so proud of your army, come down out of the hills and fight. You will find out that the people in the towns are on our side. Just ask anyone, and they will tell you who I am and who my followers are. You don't stand a chance against us. Your own ancestors were defeated twice right here in their own land. What makes you think you can win a battle in the valley against my army and cavalry? There are no rocks or stones to crawl behind, and there is no place where you can run away." Jonathan was furious when he read this letter. He chose 10,000 soldiers, then left Jerusalem to meet his brother Simon, who was coming to help him. The two brothers surrounded the town of Joppa because Apollonius had soldiers there. No one would let them in at first, but they attacked and frightened the people into opening the gates, then they took command of the town. When Apollonius found out that they had taken Joppa, he brought 3,000 cavalry and a large force of soldiers to the town of Azotus. He wanted the Jews to think he was only passing through the town, so he led his troops out to the nearby valley, where he was sure his cavalry could protect the soldiers. Jonathan followed Apollonius to Azotus, and a battle broke out when 1,000 of Apollonius's cavalry suddenly left their hiding places and attacked from behind. The cavalry surrounded Jonathan's troops and shot arrows at them from early morning until late afternoon. But Jonathan's forces held their ground, and he told them to keep fighting until the enemy cavalry wore themselves out. Then Simon led some of his soldiers into the battle and overpowered the enemy army. The enemy foot soldiers ran for their lives, and the cavalry scattered over the valleys. Some of the enemy soldiers ran back to Azotus and hid in the temple of their god Dagon, thinking they would be safe. But Jonathan destroyed Azotus and the nearby towns and took everything of value. Then he burned down the temple with everyone inside. 8,000 enemy soldiers died in the battle and the fire. Jonathan left Azotus and ordered his army to set up camp near the town of Ascalon, where the people came out to honor him. Then Jonathan and his soldiers, loaded down with everything they had taken, returned to Jerusalem. When Alexander heard about Jonathan's victories, he gave him even more honors. He sent a gold buckle that only the most respected members of the king's family were allowed to wear. Alexander also gave Jonathan the town of Ekron and the land around it. A battle between Ptolemy and Alexander. Chapter 11. King Ptolemy VI of Egypt got together more ships and soldiers than anyone could count. Then he made a secret plan to take over the kingdom of his son-in-law, Alexander. Ptolemy led his forces toward Syria and told each town he came to that he was on a friendly visit. Everyone believed Ptolemy and welcomed him, just as his son-in-law Alexander had ordered them to do. But he stationed soldiers in their towns. The people of Azotus met Ptolemy and showed him all that was left of their town, of the nearby villages, and of the temple of Dagon that had been destroyed by fire. They also showed him the piles of dead and burned bodies they had heaped up beside the road after the battle with Jonathan. Everyone blamed Jonathan for all the damage, but Ptolemy said nothing. Jonathan met Ptolemy at the town of Joppa, and Jonathan honored him. The two men spent the night there. Then, the next day, Jonathan rode with him to the Eleutherus River before heading back for Jerusalem. Soon Ptolemy had command of the towns on the coast as far as Seleucia. He kept plotting against Alexander, and one day he sent a message to Demetrius the king which said, "Let's make an agreement. I will arrange for you to marry my daughter Cleopatra, the wife of Alexander, then you can rule your father's kingdom." It was a big mistake to let Alexander marry her. He even tried to have me murdered. Ptolemy said other insulting things about Alexander because he wanted his kingdom. Then he ordered Cleopatra to leave Alexander, and he told Demetrius to marry her. Now Ptolemy and Alexander hated each other, and everyone knew it. Ptolemy went to the city of Antioch, where he crowned himself king, both of Syria and of Egypt. Alexander and Ptolemy die. Meanwhile, Alexander had gone to the country of Cilicia, because some towns there had rebelled against him. When Alexander heard what Ptolemy had done, he attacked him, but Ptolemy's large army defeated Alexander and forced him to retreat. After Ptolemy won this important victory, Alexander found a hiding place in Arabia, but Zabdiel the Arab chopped off Alexander's head and sent it to Ptolemy. 3 days later, Ptolemy himself died, and the people in his fortresses killed the soldiers he had stationed there. In the year 167 of the Syrian kingdom, Demetrius II became king. Jonathan and King Demetrius II. A little later, Jonathan gathered an army in Judea. He built a lot of weapons to break through city walls and then attacked the fortress in Jerusalem. King Demetrius II found out about the attack from some Jews who really hated the other Jews. Demetrius became furious, and right away he went to the city of Ptolemais. From there he wrote a letter to Jonathan and said, "Stop attacking the fortress in Jerusalem. Come to Ptolemais as soon as you can. We need to talk." After Jonathan read the letter, he ordered his soldiers to keep up the attack. Then he risked his own life by taking some of the priests and leaders to Ptolemais, He brought silver, gold, some clothing, and many other gifts for Demetrius, which made Demetrius friendly toward him. Some Jews who were unfaithful to their law kept bringing charges against Jonathan, but Demetrius treated him well, just as the rulers before him had done. And one day, when all the trusted friends of Demetrius were there, he gave Jonathan an even higher honor by making him one of his most trusted friends. Demetrius also let Jonathan continue as high priest and keep all the honors he had already been given. Jonathan asked Demetrius to stop collecting taxes from Judea and the three districts of Samaria, and in return he promised to give him 300,000 pieces of silver. Demetrius agreed, then wrote the following letter. King Demetrius sends greetings to his good friend Jonathan and to the Jewish nation. I am sending you a copy of the letter I wrote about you to my friend Lasthenes, and here is what I said. King Demetrius sends greetings to his dear friend Lasthenes. The Jews are our friends, and I have decided to do them a big favor, since they are loyal to us and can be trusted to keep their promises. The three regions of Ephraimah, Lydda, and Ramathaim, together with the land around them, used to belong to Samaria. Now they belong to Judea and are in official possession of the Jews. Those Jews who offer sacrifices in Jerusalem don't have to pay me my share of their grain and fruit each year, and they don't have to pay me a tenth of their crops, the fee on salt, the special royal tax, or any other taxes. Lasthenes, no one may ever change even one of these orders. Make a copy of this letter and send it to Jonathan. He will put it on God's holy mountain, where it can be seen by everyone. Trypho plots against Demetrius II. No one opposed King Demetrius II, and his kingdom was at peace. So he sent his own soldiers back home and kept only the foreign troops he had hired from the Greek islands. But this made his own soldiers turn against him, because they had fought for many years, first in his father's army and then in his. Trypho had been a follower of Alexander Epiphanes, and when he found out how angry all of Demetrius